Here we go. Episode 4. Jen Kirkman, I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast. I don't think there's two Jen Kirkmans. I don't think I need to say Jen Kirkman, then I Seem Fun. I think you know who this is. Sipping my water. I'm not thirsty until I start talking. It's the most annoying thing. Anyway, people, I am distressed. Okay, I'm hearing or I'm reading on my website from some of you folks that you are lamenting that you cannot come to my Seattle or Portland shows because you cannot afford the drink minimum. Who said anything about a drink minimum? Not me. I'm not performing at comedy clubs. I don't understand, and it's not a criticism, but help me help you help me. How can you be on my website where if you click calendar and then click the link, you can see where I'm performing and see all the rules and regulations. You're right there. And I even put all the details in the post that you put a comment in. I'm at a rock club called Rebar this Friday night, May 31st in Seattle. I've performed there before. It's awesome. It's where Nirvana had their Nevermind release party. Seats only 150 people. They didn't know they were famous yet. I know I'm not famous. That's why I have my shows there. 150 people. That's it. It is no drink minimum. I think it's only $15. I'm selling books at the show. You don't have to buy one. You can bring stuff. I'll sign it after the show. It's going to be fun. It's going to be me doing probably more than an hour of stand-up. Then the next night in Portland, Oregon, I am at the Hollywood Theater. It's an awesome, awesome theater. It's normally a movie theater. I think they serve pizza. So look, if you have an extra couple bucks, get a pizza. But no one's making you. You don't have to eat, drink. You can just, it's $12. You know, Portland. I know you tax-free libertarians who love to smoke. You'll spend that 12 bucks on something else that week if it's not me, and it's not going to be your rent. It's going to be something, you know, those donuts that people get with ham in them or whatever they do up there. Just come to my show. There's no drink minimums there either. It's not a comedy club. I did this for you. And certain markets I go to, sorry, markets means cities. It probably doesn't. I know, hey, I think some of my fans, I know that's a terrible word, but I know some of the people that enjoy me in these areas are younger or more bohemian, and they don't want to be in a corporate comedy club with a two drink minimum. So you know what? When I go to those parts of America, I won't do the corporate comedy club route. I'll save that for other areas. But this one is for the kids. I think they're all, now they might be 21 plus, but here's the deal with 21 plus shows. As long as you're 18, you can get in with a guardian who's 21. So don't go whining. So guys, come on out. I got you. I got you right up front. Plugs. Oh, so if you want to buy tickets in advance, you just go to my website, jenkirkman.com, hit tour dates, and every link is there. So you just click on it. It should take you right to buying tickets. You can also walk into the places. You can call them. There should be tickets at the door. But listen, people, I plugged you up front. I got you. And you probably fast forwarded. So the people who didn't fast forward, let's mess with the people who did fast forward, because now they're trying to find where I'm at in the story. You missed the story. Did you just fast forward? Did you just fast forward and this is what you're hearing? Yeah, I wasn't plugging. You missed a whole story. You got to go back. I mean, I can keep going with the story. So yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, that was the time that my teacher got me pregnant. And, but you know, I had the baby and I sent it to Cambodia. Okay, that scene, you fast forwarded, that didn't happen. But rewind and you'll find out, oh, I screwed it up. Who cares? So this is a game that doesn't work for anybody because none of us know who fast forwarded and who didn't. And the people that did are like, I'm going to keep fast forwarding. Go ahead, go to the end, see if I care. Okay, this week, we're going to talk about, anyway, so I hope you can come to those shows. I've performed in Seattle once a year for the past couple of years. I missed you. I didn't know who you were. I know. And I loved it. I think actually right now, Seattle might be my favorite city to perform in. The crowds have always been so like loose, easy, ready to laugh. They go with everything, whether it's something really stupid or something really smart. Like they just don't take things personally. I like the Seattle crowd. So I hope I see all 150 of your faces. Okay. Today we're going to do something different. I'm going to read something from the paper, but I'm not going to read to you. Don't worry. But I subscribe to the Sunday New York Times. I have since I've lived in LA for 10 years. It's just a little something that it's just a nice big paper. I feel like LA Times is always like show business stuff, but New York Times is like everything. And I like to read the travel stuff and the book reviews. And I love Bill Cunningham's fashion section. The one section of the New York Times I never read was the weddings announcements. It's called vows, but these aren't these people's vows. And I guess that's why I always avoided it. No, I knew it wasn't vows, but I always just thought, like, let me guess, some girl from the Upper East Side is marrying some guy from the Upper West Side, and they have $5 million, and who cares? But I was kind of wrong, and I'm going to read you a couple things from that later, because I'm very intrigued by the people who put listings in and why. And as someone who was once married, who really just didn't want to make a big deal of it, and everybody says, that's because you were with the wrong guy. I guess that's kind of true. Like, I never was like fantasizing about my wedding day, but even when I was little, it wasn't something I fantasized about. I just feel like, you know, when you're a performer and you never see your family, your extended family, except once in a while you come back to Boston to do shows, I feel like I'm always performing in front of them, and not that they have to come see me, but sometimes they do. And I just felt like the wedding was another performance. It was like, can we do one thing private? Like, I really wanted to do an elope or a town hall thing and then have a party later. And if like someone wanted to make a toast, that would be great. But they really didn't want to make anyone sit through the ceremony where they really didn't know my husband and his family didn't really know me, extended family. And like, what's the point? Also, we were 35. It's like, you know, like, who cares? But, and then I thought that same way about like getting wedding photos taken, not the ones at the wedding, but like when people get engagement photos, like they do like a little like publicity shoot. And then it's like a press release, like we're engaged. And then you're like, how am I supposed to react to that? Like, does that mean gift? Does that mean gift? Because you get a card in the mail with their picture, but there's nowhere where they are registered. But now people don't do that anymore. You're supposed to like know someone. There's like a gatekeeper, like, yeah, you were supposed to buy a gift. You're supposed to email the bride's cousin, Marcy. Everyone knows she's on Facebook. Oh, and then what do I do? You ask her where they're registered. Well, why couldn't they put it on the card? That's tacky. Well, so is to have an engagement present. I'm sorry, but I'm assuming you're going to do the shower and the bachelorette party and the wedding. The engagement thing is starting to be like a new ripoff, a new level of ripoff. But I always thought it was weird when people took those photos. But I used to think, God, take yourselves a little more seriously. Why don't you? But now I'm realizing they weren't taking themselves seriously. They were taking themselves funsily. You know, they were having fun together. I guess if I was marrying like Johnny Depp or something, I would want like 40 photos. Like, let's prove this happened. This happened, right? You're getting engaged. You said you were. Like, I would want photos. So I guess when you're like truly head over heels in love, that everyone is Johnny Depp to you. Your man is your Johnny Depp, and you want proof, and this is happening, and let's show everybody, and let's just make it fun. I guess what sucks and what the bottom line is we all know, because we've either all been married or we've all gone to a wedding, but I think even the married people can cop to this. It's never that fun when other people are getting married. And I know that everyone tries to make it as fun for everyone as possible, but there's nothing fun about getting that picture that people had professionally taken. It just, no one cares. But it's not like no one cares and they're stewing about it. It's just like, oh, that's good. I hope their families really like that. I'm going to probably just keep that on my coffee table for a week and put it in the recycling. And here's the thing, never mind marriage, but, and I'm not bitter about marriage. Like, I don't want any emails like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I'll fuck you. I'll date you. No. Let's get this very, 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 very clear. I made a mistake getting married. I'm sure my husband would say he made a mistake too. Now, do I regret it? No, I would do it all over again because I like that I came out the other side divorced instead of stayed single those years and saw what happened. Because I think I would always have thought that marriage is something you do to normalize yourself. And since I lived such an alternative lifestyle in terms of being into comedy and traveling and never knowing what my job is and not being a homeowner by a certain age and not having kids, that like marriage was the one thing I could do where everyone get off my back. Look, I'm normal. I really think deep down I thought that. And you just think like, well, you know, if all my dreams don't come true, at least I have a partner in crime. Now I'm realizing that it made me very uncomfortable to be married and I didn't like having another family in my life. I just think it's very weird when you already have a mother that there suddenly is a 60-year-old woman in your life that's like, hi, what are you doing? And you're like, I don't know you. But I just feel like for me, I don't foresee getting married again, but it's not the same way that I'm like, I definitely don't want kids. Like, who knows? Circumstances can change, but it would definitely be way later in life. Like after I've figured a few things out, done a few more things I want to do. I've got to be a little selfish right now with, trying to get to the next level in certain areas of my life so that I can feel a little more settled. So it's hard to do when you're married. You really have this other person you have to think of all the time and you expect them to think of you. And it's a lot to ask of yourself and it's a lot to ask of someone else. And it just has to be really kind of the perfect situation. And when it's not coming together, it's a good time to just be like, you know what, this is some me time. Now, what I would love, you know, but people seem to get weird with divorce people. They think we're lonely. They think we're sad. Or they think we're bitter. You got to get back out there. It's like, no, I have no doubt there's someone wandering the earth for me, but I might not want just one person. And then, you know, there's the problem women like me have where it's like, I'm not the 20-year-old model, but I'm almost 40, but you know, I'm doing pretty good. But I want the guy who's kind of like me, like wants to just kind of, let's keep it breezy, but we'll go to Italy because we are fun and have the means. But then once you say to a guy, I swear I don't want to be your girlfriend, but can we go on a trip? They're like, oh my God, you're falling in love with me. And you're like, I'm really not. But they just don't believe it because they've been conditioned to be afraid. But then the guy that like wants to go on a date and is like, anyway, someday I want marriage and kids. You're like, oh, why don't you be a freak like all the other people and just do it at 53? Why are you with me? This date is over, you know? So it's hard to be in that middle ground. But I also don't want to be hooking up with random strangers. That is never something I want to do. So it's just interesting. You want to find like a sea of friends that you're like, this is my more than friend, and we're going to Italy sometimes. But he's free to do whatever he wants. Guys never, ever believe you when you say that you're that type of woman. I think when they finally believe me, I'll be like, Sunny, I'm 100 and my pussy fell off. Well, now it's too late. I told you I was. I don't know why. I don't think your pussy falls off when you're 100. But you know what? If that causes less things to have to do and wash, great. You know, it's perks of getting older. Anyway, this isn't about that. My whole point of why I never read the Sunday New York Times wedding section when I lived in New York is because I was this weird contrarian. Like, when I was growing up, I would sit in my bedroom and read books about James Dean, and I wanted to be in that kind of New York, like Eartha Kitt ballet class, and everyone's sort of bisexual, and I'm taking the Stanislavski master class, and I'm carrying around like a black and white camera. I guess they're all black and white, then it wasn't a type of camera. I'm carrying like a 35mm camera, and I'm, you know, I just imagine that my life would be a collage of Dorothy Parker's Algonquin Roundtable years and James Dean's, you know, studying dance years and Marilyn Monroe's, you know, masterclass with Stanislavski years. I just thought it was going to be that. And I knew all that stuff wasn't existing, but I wanted it to feel that way. And so when I got to New York, I very much rejected the people that were obsessed with being in modern times New York. Like, I didn't want to know about Sex and the City, even though it was the most popular show on TV. And I was in my 20s and I was such an asshole about it. I was like, these women are so materialistic and all they think about is sex. Meanwhile, all I thought about was money and sex. I didn't have that much money. I made, you know, I don't even know what I made, but I definitely had money left over every month because I had no need to pay for health insurance. My company covered it. I had no car and my rent was $300 a month. So I spent all my extra money. Was I helping starving children? No, I was sitting there in bars, taking cabs because I was too drunk to get on the subway. I was buying knockoff bags on Canal Street, you know, buying jewelry on Broadway, you know, those little like stands that have things. I was shopping every weekend. I was getting my manicure every weekend. I was going to brunch, but I was just doing it like not fancy. You know, I wasn't in, you know, Saks. I was shopping on the streets. But in my mind, I was just, you know, so much above whoever these women were on Sex and the City, these terrible, terrible women. So I had this roommate who was this theater person. We'd gone to college together and I went into comedy. She went into theater and she was always auditioning and hustling. And sometimes she smelled and didn't shower that well. And she was very dramatic. And you'd often hear a lot of like banshee type crying. Either it was sex or it was a fight with a boyfriend. But there was always a lot of primal screaming coming from her room. And she was the type of person that I'd be in the shower in the morning and she'd run in, "Oh my God, Kirkman, I'm so sorry." And she would take an enormous dump in the toilet while I was showering. And I would be like gagging in the shower. But we only had one bathroom. And she was an overeater and would eat a lot in the middle of the night, and then it would come out in the morning. Okay, so that was disgusting. But that's who she was, you know, warts and all, and very political and very smart and very feminist, and I loved her. But to me, her one fatal flaw was that she watched Sex and the City every Sunday night and had some girlfriends over, some girls I didn't really know. I didn't know who they were. And they would sit in the living room, and I would, instead of just leaving the house like a normal person, I would sit in my room protesting. Like, just sit with the door shut, blatantly not coming out, thinking that she would sit there going, "God, I guess I'm not the intellectual I thought I was, because I can't pass up this HBO show. And Jen must really be in there, you know, doing important things." So, and by the way, my room wasn't even, because that's why I only paid $300 rent, because my room was the smallest room in the place. It was like the size of a single bed. That was about all that fit in my room, was a single bed. You couldn't even open the door all the way. So I had to kind of like inch myself down the bed, roll over, and then sneak out my door every morning. That was my life. And I had no dresser. I had nothing. So I always had this kind of snobbery about it. And I was like, even though I had no idea that like, that's all Sex and the City was like my life, but more glamorous. Like, Carrie used her credit card for everything, but never got in trouble for it. Meanwhile, creditors were calling my apartment and I was like, what? Like, I literally thought if you didn't pay your credit card, they couldn't get you. And I'm like, how'd they get this number? You know, who are these creditors they handed it off to? I just really thought they would just let it go, and that I'd found the best scam in the world, which is not paying. So that really screwed up my credit for a long time, but I finally got out of debt like 8 years ago from the mistakes in my 20s. If I had kids, I would tell them, don't use credit cards. Or if you do, use them for an emergency. And an emergency is not two earrings for $20 on, you know, at Urban Outfitters. So, or whatever store they had then that was like Urban Outfitters. So I didn't watch Sex and the City. And another thing I didn't do, it was like being, it's like a Boston person. Like, you still come to New York with a little bit of attitude. Like, I'm not going to totally get into it here. So, but then I moved to LA. Okay. So I moved to LA, got out of, you know, my roommate started becoming a crazy person after a while. Like, she started sleeping with a married man and he was really gross, but she kind of got obsessed and thought she was like Carrie Bradshaw. Like, later in life, I got into the show Sex and the City and I saw the episodes where Carrie Bradshaw was living with Aiden and they were engaged, and then she started sleeping with Mr. Big again, who is married. Now I realize that my roommate, I think, I don't know if it lined up exactly, but was trying to do some kind of weird parallel life thing, because she had like a blog that I think she pretended was like Carrie's, you know, column. And then she was like, I'm sleeping with a married man. But it wasn't like, this guy was no Mr. Big. He was like a gross, like chubbo who mumbled when he talked. And I came home one day and there was a condom used in my bed and an ashtray under my bed. And I'm like, well, I didn't do this, unless I was in some crazy blackout where I grew a penis, jerked off into a condom and smoked 5 cigarettes and put them under the bed. But I don't think that happened. So I was like, you cannot sleep with a married man in my bed. And she was like, well, I just feel so weird in my own bed. Like, she thought I would buy this drama. But like, oh, I see what you mean. So you're wrapped with guilt and your weird dirty toes and, you know, stinky butt from this morning's unloading. So you just need to put them in my bed because you feel weird because you're with a married man. Oh, well, you didn't explain it that way. Andy, you didn't explain it that way. Of course that's okay. Just let me know next time, because imagine my surprise when I put my hand in someone else's sperm in my bed. But anyway, as long as I know the psychology behind it, go ahead. I mean, what was she thinking I was going to do? So after 9/11, I thought to myself, okay, I'm blatantly in a city that could be blown up anytime. And had I been in the towers, my life would have ended that day. And that's the last thing that would have happened to me that morning, is, you know, someone pooping in my presence when I'm in the shower, some day job I have at an internet company. I don't want to go out like this. At least when I have one thing going on that I'm enjoying, I've always wanted to live in LA. Now is the time. So I moved to LA like 4 months after 9/11. And I moved there because I was doing stand-up on a TV show just one shot, one thing, no big deal. I took a train out, which I later found out the girls on Sex and the City did. I did not know at the time. Took a train to LA. Loved it, by the way. If you ever can take a train, if you ever can be 27, so afraid of flying that it doesn't matter how inconvenient a train is, and you can take one, do it. Get Motley Crue's The Dirt. Read that book the whole weekend. And when the train stops in New Mexico, get off, buy like a little Navajo blanket that they're making, and then they have margaritas. Get a margarita for the rest of the trip. It's great. So anyway, get to LA. I call my roommate. I'm like, yeah, I love it here. Can you just sell my stuff for me? Thanks. And I mean, I shouldn't have been 27 with no belongings. But when I read these wedding vow pages of these people, they're like, I'm 27. I'm getting married. I'll get to that. But anyway, so I moved to LA. Now I have another situation where I'm just renting a room from even worse people. So now these are two hippies. And my boyfriend at the time that I was dating was like, you can tell that your roommate, the male one, is a psycho because he's wearing corduroy jackets and turtlenecks in the summer. And he seems to have no notice of temperature. That's how you tell someone's a sociopath. And I was like, oh, interesting point. And so he and his girlfriend stood in my doorway one day and they're like, you never talk to us. And I was like, because they looked like a Charles Manson cult people. He looked like Charles Manson. She looked like she would be in his cult. And I go, yeah, I'm just, you know, I just think of it as renting a room. I don't need to know you guys. Like, I've had a roommate in New York and I'm just kind of traumatized from it. And I don't want to know who I live with or talk to them or anything. And they were like, well, we're just glad you're here and away from that New York. Was 9/11 really scary? And I was like, no, I mean, it was scary in the sense that it's horrifying. But when you're actually part of something like that, you realize that there's no time to think about yourself. You have to help other people. And I don't know, it just kind of brought me into the world. Like, everywhere in the world could be fodder for revolution at any time. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of a good thing to realize. And she was like, well, I'm just glad all those greedy people in the towers are dead. And I hope it happens to all the rich people in Malibu. I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. No one so far that I've talked to was happy that anyone in the towers are dead. I mean, you got people that think the government did it. These buildings imploded. Those were bombs. Everyone was behind it. I mean, there's all kinds of theories out there that are unsympathetic to many people, whether it's the Arab community or our own government. But nobody has ever said, F those greedy people working in those buildings, they deserve to die. These were all different kinds of places. You know what I mean? You're going to say that to the cater waiter that had to work that day at the top of that restaurant that came in early, you know? And all I could think of on 9/11, by the way, was when I lived in New York, I had a temp job at Donna Karan, New York. And I came in one day and every corner has a little like authentic deli with really good coffee and a bagel and cream cheese. So every day I would come in with my coffee, my bagel and cream cheese. And this gay guy there was so the opposite of Devil Wears Prada. He was not like trying to help me with anything. He was only trying to shame me. And he turned around and he's like, what are you doing? And I'm like, it's my bagel and coffee. I bring it in every day. He's like, we've been noticing. Hun, when you work in high fashion, and by the way, we were just in like the buyer's office, which nothing high fashion was going on. Hun, when you work in high fashion, you don't walk around with your own bagel and coffee. You walk into work, hands free, showing your purse. You sit down, you call the deli, they deliver it. I go, so that Puerto Rican guy behind the counter has to now run across the street for a delivery of something that costs $1.50 and I'm going to tip him 50 cents. He's like, yes. I'm like, that seems awful. He has to keep, like, he wasn't a specified delivery guy. It's just a thing they do. And I'm sure everyone's fine with it, but I always just felt gross about it. Like, how can I walk past somewhere and not just order it myself? But I eventually got used to the calling and having someone, and all I could think on 9/11 was how many assholes were like, I am not holding my own coffee and bagel. And then a guy got trapped in the elevator because he had to deliver it. Now, even those people that I think are dicks are not dicks. No one deserved to die is my point. This is not funny. How did I get into 9/11? How did this happen? I am so sorry. You know what? Don't fast forward. I'm going to get off 9/11 in a second. But anyway, I just said to them, I don't really want to talk to you about who should and shouldn't die in America. And, you know, I would love to have a house in Malibu. So I hope if I ever have one that, you don't will it to crash in the ocean. Because I tried to make a joke about their crazy eyes. I'm like, because you guys seem pretty powerful. And with a long enough stares, you could melt rubble. And they just stared at me. And then a month later, the girl went to New Mexico and never came back. And the guy would sit in my doorway and go, I'm so heartbroken. And I'd be like, that's great. And then he heard me crying one night because I had just gotten dumped. And he was like, hey, heard we're both in the same boat. I'm like, we're together. And I would try to just like go sleep on people's couches. So he thought I was still with my boyfriend. It was a nightmare. And then one night he's like, do you want to go see Steve Martin with me? I know you like comedy. I'm like, no, don't ask to say, I know you like comedy. I do comedy. It's different than liking it, which I like it too. But anyway, I moved out of there real quick. Not that quick, but real quick. Anyway. The point is, I always rejected kind of New York City culture. Oh, my whole point of that story was, so when I was sad and depressed and dumped and living in LA and I didn't have a job that paid very much and I was really broke and really scared and the credit card companies were coming after me, I couldn't afford to do anything or go anywhere. And I had on DVD somehow, I think I borrowed them from someone, the Sex and the City episodes that I hadn't seen. And I started watching them. And I was like, I love this show. I love these girls. They remind me of me and my friends, except for my roommate who would take huge dumps. But it reminds me of me and my friends, just the way that they love each other. They reconvene. They talk it over. It made me so happy. And it's still like one of my favorite shows. And I'm an old lady who's going down with the Sex and the City ship. Like, I even loved Sex and the City too. I loved it. I know it's bad. It's cheesy. They did the burka thing. But I'll tell you this. There really is a thing where the designer clothes under the burkas. That really is a thing. So that's, even though it looked stupid, I don't know if they're all reading the Suzanne Summers hormone book, but, and the other thing is, I just feel like, listen, there's some gay kid out there who's still, and my friend said to me, Jen, Glad did their job. They're every show has gay people in it now. Everyone's fine. She's kidding. But I'm like, there's some kid out there who snuck out to see this movie and saw the Liza Minnelli, all the single ladies moment at the gay wedding. And is like crying, going, someday I'll meet a man. I'll get out of this horrible town. I'll go to New York. I don't know. I just feel like I like that movies like that are out there. I think it's just as good for people's imaginations as superhero movies. You know, let Carrie wear a cape. I'll let your Superman wear a cape. You know, we're even, right? Let the girls have their fantasies. Don't attack women once every 2 years when these movies come out. They look old. You know how stupid Vince Vaughn, even his pupils are bloated. You know how stupid Vince Vaughn looks in every movie? So just everyone stop it. All right. So here's my whole damn point is I was rejected kind of New York City culture when I was in it. And now I kind of miss living there and I like to just read things about it. But I never read the Vow stuff. And I said, you know what? I'm going to read it this week. I'm just going to see. And I was totally wrong in some sense. It's really not a lot of people sitting there going, oh, we're all so wealthy and everything's going well. First of all, I was shocked to find black people in here. I feel like I didn't know black culture cared about putting their picture together of two people canoodling and then announcing where they're getting married. But I always think of this as such a white thing. And I mean that in a bad way, but that's probably also racist. But okay. So then I'm noticing it's all men and women and then gay people, but no lesbians. No lesbians put their vows or their wedding announcement in the New York Sunday Times, which I thought was fascinating because if it is because what I think, which is every lesbian I know is like, yeah, I want my rights to be able to get married, but I'm not saying I'm going to go about it the way that straight people do and gay guys who act like straight people. Like, I went to a lesbian wedding that I didn't even know was a wedding. They didn't say it was a wedding. It was the best wedding I ever went to in my life. Imagine this. I go to my friend's house. Hey, do you want to come over tonight for wine? No, I'm too lazy to get out of bed. Oh no, Jen, I think you'll love it. Like, we've got wine and cheese. And I'm like, oh, cheese. All right. Yeah. So I get up, I go, she goes, it's super casual. Like literally if you're in like pajama bottoms, come over. I'm like, sounds good. I will. I did. And you have to take off your shoes at this friend's place anyway, because their downstairs neighbors don't like clomping. So I've got slippers on, basically sweatpants, t-shirt, drinking wine with a bunch of other lovely ladies, cheese. Like 2 hours into it, we're all really good and buzzed. My friend goes, I'd like to make an announcement. And now I'm thinking, oh, she's just drunk. And she's going to be like, friendship is great. And she was like, we got married a few hours ago at town hall. We didn't want to make a big deal, but you know, gay marriage is legal for, you know, 9 seconds in LA. So we took advantage of it. We just wanted our closest friends to come over, but we didn't want it to be a pain in the ass. So thank you guys. And we're like, what? Like, I didn't even bring a bottle of wine to say thank you. It was the greatest wedding I ever went to in my life. Have a wedding where the people do not know they're at a wedding. That's what you should do. Especially as you get older, I think people appreciate it. So God bless. All right. My favorite part of these announcements is half the marriages in here say the bride's first marriage ended in divorce, as did the groom's. I didn't realize that all these people sometimes could be second time arounders. I always thought it was like brand new, you know, hope for the future, young people getting married. And I loved that there's also a divorce announcement at the end of the wedding announcement. Like, I'm not sure why they thought to put that in. They're like, well, we better come clean. This isn't our first time around. Like, if it makes you get them a less expensive gift, if it makes you just go, oh, I really hope it works out for them, if they want to inspire other people, or if they don't want that in there. But there's some dick at the New York Times, and they're acting like someone who runs a Wikipedia page, like, well, we have to put this fact in, it's available. And they're like, oh, why did they have to bring that up? You know, but I just can't imagine getting married again and then just saying, like, going down the same list. Well, minus my husband's family. That would be weird if I invited them. Hey, everyone, remember that thing you did? Come back again. I'd like more gifts because I obviously can't have the same plates I had with my ex-husband. Don't be stupid. And let's just do this again and, you know, waste another weekend of yours in the summer. Okay. Here's, I'm going to read, there's one couple I think that they're going to end up in murder, and I'll save that for last, but there's some people that I did get angry at. Okay, Andrea Lofgren and William Schneider. I'm like, you nerds, I don't like you at all. They, first of all, their friend became a universal life minister for the occasion, and she was the officiant. And it just made me so mad at them, even though I should really be mad at my friends, because I remember moving my wedding around like three times because certain friends of mine had gigs, because everyone I know is a comedian, or they work, you know, as directors or actors or set designers in movies. Like, everyone has a non-normal job. So a weekend is actually the most terrifying time to plan a wedding because that's when nobody's around. They're like, can you do it on a Monday? I'm like, no, I can't do it on a Monday. So I was just like, oh, that's nice. They have a friend that became a minister. It'd be nice to have friends that care. So then I was like, my minister was my eighth grade librarian. I didn't even know her that well, but she's Jewish and I heard she became a minister and I'm like, perfect. She won't add any weird like Christian shit in there. It'll be great. So the bride 27 is taking her husband's name, which I think is so odd when you're 27. Like, what did any, like, why? Unless you have kids, but then wait till you have kids. Or just let your kids take your husband's name or something. I don't understand, like, why do you want to change your social security card, your checkbook, your license, your everything? Then you have to change it back if you get divorced, which you might. They're only 27. But these aren't like 27-year-olds. If you look at their picture, they're already like 50. You know, they're not like, well, I'm going to have a wild period. There's no wild period. But I remember when I was getting married, my dad took me off the altar. No, I mean, he like didn't like go grab me and like throw me over his shoulder. But as we were leaving, he was like, did you kept your name, right? I'm like, yeah. He goes, you're going to do that? I'm like, yes, I'm going to keep my name, Dad. Like, Ron Kirkman needed me to have my name because, you know, he had three girls. So no one's going to keep on his Kirkman family name. And in a way that we all did, because we're all divorced and we're all independent and we all want to keep our, my other sisters have changed their names in the past and they're like, we'll never do that again. And so I think he just likes writing letters to us and putting our last name. It's like, that's right. My baby girls didn't disappear into another man's identity. Good for them. Okay. So then, okay. So those two are pursuing social work degrees. They're lawyers. They're 27. They're 28. They grew up in Brooklyn. They live in Brooklyn. That's great. Blah, blah, blah. They'll inherit, you know, their parents' house. Everything's perfect. I don't ever want to go have dinner with these people. I feel like they're one of those people that eats quietly and then you come over and there's a bottle of wine, but the cheese is set out, but the wine is in the kitchen and you feel like suddenly you look like an alcoholic if you don't, like if you say anything. So it's like, I guess like they, have you ever had those people that you come over and you might even bring a wine or something, they put it away and then the cheese is ready in the living room and you sit down and have some apps. And then no one's making a move for the cocktail. Like, it should be the first, especially on a Friday, Saturday night, you're going to a friend's house. The first thing they should do, you open the door, they have a drink ready. It should just be automatic, like fun time. Don't yell fun time because you sound like a drunk idiot, but just create the fun time atmosphere. And the people that can sit there and you're like an hour later, they're like, oh my God, do you want wine? It's like, of course I'm dying for it, but I didn't want to ask. And that's my problem. I should just ask from now on. And then I'll be thought of as like the fun wine drinker that comes over. But anyway, I don't like these people. I wish them well because, you know, what else do they have going on? Here's an interesting one too. Okay, so this Asian woman is 41. She works at the History Channel. She's marrying a 74-year-old philanthropist and retired financier. So he sounds rich, right? No one goes into philanthropic pursuits unless they have money. Like, If you don't have to do it, sometimes it's easier. It's like, I'm so rich, I'm bored, let's help people. The groom's been widowed and his second marriage ended in divorce. So he's had one wife die, one wife legally left, or he left her. Whenever I see, now listen, I have no problem with age stuff because I'm in, like, I'll date someone in their 50s. I totally will. And I'm only 38. And it's not a daddy issue thing or whatever. It's just a convenience thing. Like, usually at that point, they know they definitely don't want kids or their kids are grown up. It's like convenient for lifestyle stuff. But 41 to 74, how is that convenient for your lifestyle? Like, he's literally starting to be at that age where he needs Viagra. There's probably prostate issues. He can't make it through the night without going pee. Is he having trouble walking? What are you getting out of it, 41? You're a lady. You have 20 years of maybe a good sex life yet. Why? You think he's going to be sympathetic when he's 80 and you're going through menopause? He's not going to be. He might have dementia. So you're trying to get his money, but he's not old enough to die soon. So you have at least 20 more years of trying to get his money. And his money will be dwindling since now he's into being a philanthropist. He's not earning that much every year. I know he's earning on interest and capital, but he's not putting it in every month. So putting in financially, not a dick joke. But so I just go, oh, daddy issues. That's it. He wants someone young to take care of him, as we all do. I don't blame him. I'd prefer to hire someone. I feel like it's less creepy. She has daddy issues. I feel like they go to a party. They look normal. You know, everyone's fine. And then they get home and she sits on his lap in like some weird way, but not like sexual, like if it was a 20-year-old and a 60-year-old, but like weird comforting way. She just curls up with him. And I just go, okay, well, but you know what? If you need to marry your daddy issues and it works for you, God bless. But I'm just saying, let's not act like that's normal. Okay. This last couple, oh no. So this one is so interesting. Okay. These people, this guy, he works for a mortgage broker office. He is the vice president to this place. His wife is a sales associate there. So you think, oh, that's how they met. He was at work. He went and saw one of the underlings, thought she was pretty. They went out. You know, she doesn't have aspirations. She just probably wants to be a mom and she's a sales associate to make some money and they're going to be great. Then you read three paragraphs down. Until 2011, this woman, 30, was an actress. She was in the cast of Prom Queen, an internet soap opera, had roles on the ABC soap opera One Life to Live, as well as the television series Rescue Me on the FX network. Now, I know these could be day player parts, not making anyone rich, but that's good. If you're an actress and you're getting roles, that's good. That's hard to do. She could keep the momentum going. She could be an acting teacher as well. Who just decides the year they get married, I'm going to stop acting and go work at my husband's company? Something is going on there. There's something in that family where they looked down on her for being an actress. And she's like, well, what am I going to do? Be an actress forever? I mean, I probably won't make it. Here I am 30 and I better just think about settling down and I need the money. I really think something weird happened there where she's giving up on her dreams. And that paragraph to me might as well all be in red with flags around it. It's like red flag. And I really wish they did divorce announcements. And I want that to be one I read about where it's like, you know what? I felt like I had to be normal and compromise to be with this family, but I'm a good actress. And luckily I look young for my age. So I grew into my looks and I'm 48 and I'm playing the mom and stuff and I'm doing really good. And my new husband, Francois, he's a director. He's 28, but he's just so mature. You know, he doesn't want women his age and we're really happy. Like, I can't wait for her second marriage. Like right now she's in a little bit of a holding place. She's trying to be normal. She's gaining some weight. She thinks she's happy because she's taken care of, but being taken care of, you realize every once in a while, it can be very stifling. Okay. So good luck with them. We'll see what happens with that. These people, this story really threw me for a loop. Okay. Because here's the thing. I really, really don't think I want to get married again. But here's where marriage fucks with you. When you read about guys doing something romantic for a woman and the woman isn't even like super hot, you're like, why doesn't anyone do that for me? Like, why did I never meet the creative guy who went through all this trouble to propose that like knew exactly what he wanted, that knew I can't lose this girl. I have to do everything for her. Like, I never seem to attract those type of guys. I think maybe because I'm such a control freak and I do everything that they're like, oh, get out of her way, you know? But this kind of made me have that ping, that ping that even the most independent woman gets where you're like, well, I want someone to feel that way about me. And then you realize that's okay. I can sit with that feeling once in a while for 10 minutes. What I can't sit with is, oh my God, I'm stuck. They're farting in my bed. Another night of his friends coming over. I'm so, ugh. You know, so I would rather the ping of, oh, I want that. Because I'm wanting a fantasy about these people. That's all they're presenting in this paper is fantasy. And that's why I always kind of didn't like this column because I thought it made people feel bad. Because it really is. People just get to sit around Sunday morning and compare their worst to these people's best, right? That's all we know about them, except some of them were divorced. So, all right, here's the story with these people. This guy's kind of my type too. He's thin. He's got crazy wild hair. He's an architect and a designer, and he makes furniture. I've never dated anyone who makes furniture or is an architect or designer, but I think that's the latent Jesus thing in me. Like, that was the one thing I remembered from church. Like, Jesus is hot. His hair is long and beautiful. And he was a carpenter, but like super spiritual, drank wine and seemed to pretty much have a good time. So that's kind of the guy I'm looking for and have always been looking for, but I'm not really looking for one guy. Like, if there were three dudes like that and one of them also lived in Italy, that'd be great. Now, and my mom had a very hot picture of Jesus in her room. He was tan, blonde, looked like Brad Pitt from Thelma and Louise, but with the Kurt Cobain from Nirvana Unplugged eyes. You know what I mean? So it was like that. And I was saying a picture to my mom the other day. I go, it's so weird you have that Jesus picture. You know Jesus didn't look like that. He was Middle Eastern. She goes, I know, but the picture has sentimental value for me. You know, your grandmother's cousin painted that. I said, oh, I never met him. I don't know Nana's cousin. Oh, no, he was in prison. He murdered his wife. He was deeply religious, though, so he painted that in his spare time. Oh, well, that's nice. So the hand that he murdered his wife with painted a picture of a hot Jesus. I'll enjoy that next to your bed, Mom. Okay, so here's these people, Diana and Jonathan. So Jonathan has been married before, okay? Keep that in mind. So Jonathan is an architect. He owns his own firm in Brooklyn. That's already hot. It's like different. Doesn't sound too snooty. He sounds neato. Diana temporarily worked for a fabric shop in Manhattan. She was kind of dating someone. He was still married. He walked into her fabric shop to buy something and they felt a spark. She thought he was cute, but she thought it was fleeting. She was kind of involved with someone and he was still married. It wasn't our time. That has got to be the worst feeling when you're married. Where you just meet someone and you're like, ah, they are sparking me in a way I haven't been sparked in a while. What is this going to go to marriage? I mean, why bother getting out of my marriage for this spark? Well, it would be a life of different sparks every once in a while. But no, what if this is the spark? Oh, why is this happening? You know, you're tortured by it. So that was 2006. They didn't connect again until 2011 when Diana received an invitation from Jonathan for an architectural event at the Museum of Modern Art. He was now divorced. She accepted, telling him that she would be there with bells on. It was not really a date, he said, though he hoped it would turn into one. But she had to cancel at the last minute and they did not get together until a few weeks later at a restaurant in Manhattan. A week after that, Jonathan stopped by Diana's studio in Brooklyn, and before a date, they began a conversation about art, architecture, and many other things. The conversation lasted until the sun came up. Jonathan began playing on Diana's I'll Be There With Bells On promise, buying her a souvenir bell on trips he took for her or for her art openings and other special occasions. Unbeknownst to Diana, each bell was keyed to a specific note. Last October, Jonathan and Diana were in a neighborhood where she grew up. He had some of the bells from her collection, and he asked her to hang them in a certain order on a piece of wood. He then gave her one final bell, tuned to F sharp, to complete a set of 18 notes. Once the last note was in place, Jonathan played the bells to the tune of the wedding march and asked her to marry him. It gets psycho at the end, right? You're like, what? The bells, huh? How did he tune? So he must have bought all the bells at once, knew how they were tuned to play the wedding march, and then parceled them out to her, knowing someday he would do this. That you can keep a secret that long and you're that sure it's going to work out, to me is the mind of a sociopath. I'm sorry. Not have you ever felt violent? Have you ever felt angry? That is so plotted and calculated that if someone did that to me, I would say, did you just think of it this afternoon? And some, no, I've been plotting it for a year and a half. Okay. That's how you will plot my death. That's how you will plot my death. How did he know it would play like that? And also maybe she is the right woman for him and I'm not, because I would be like, I don't know how to hang these on the wood. What do you mean? I don't have scotch tape. Do you have a nail and a hammer? Why do I have to hang all 18? This is stupid. Why did you bring my bells with me? You took my bells out of my place and brought them with me. But, well, now we're going to have to bring them all back and it's going to make noise on the train. This is really weird. We just leave them there. And then he would have been like, I'm not asking this rude bitch to marry me. So there's something about him that I don't trust. And now I'm wondering, did he want to be super romantic with his first wife and he just never had the chance? And now he's fulfilling a fantasy that he didn't get to carry out with her. And it's not about Diana, the new woman at all. It's just about, I love the romance of how I met her. And then I need to insist that everything goes my way with these bells. You know, like, I don't know. I just feel like I would like to know if when she dies, it's by his hand. That's all. That's all I'm saying. Look at my Nana's cousin. He murdered his wife, deeply religious, and then painted a picture of Jesus like nothing happened. So, you know, men are capable of crazy things. So are women. So is anybody. So for me, I look for the red flags. I gave up acting for you. Am I going to have resentment? Is she going to chop him up later? I was just getting cooking on One Life to Live and you made me take a desk job, you know? Or is this Bell guy just going to be like, I don't feel like she was ever grateful enough. Now what, you know? These vows made me feel strangely better that I didn't have this whirlwind story of my engagement and didn't take press photos and didn't announce it to anybody. It just leaves too much room for speculation. But also reading these things, if anyone out there feels unloved, just read these things and you go, do I really want all that rigmarole? Now everyone's calling you on a Sunday morning. I saw you in the paper. And you're like, I'm trying to sleep. Even that is just the most annoying part. Anyway, so I think I'll be perusing the New York Times wedding section from now on, because I'm just fascinated by what people do when they feel the need to partner up and why it's got to be this big ceremony. Anyway, here's what I need you to do. I already got my plugs in up front. Go to jenkirkman.com. You can sign up for my email list right on the front page there. I only send it out every 2 weeks. It's run through a company. They don't spam you. They don't keep your name. I'm not going to sell you jewelry. Also, my books are available. I have one book, amazon.com. You can get the audio version, the Kindle, or the hardcover. And there's also a page on my website under the tab books that tells you where to get them indie style at indie bookstores all around the country. And check my tour dates. I'm coming to London in September, Indiana in October, Austin in September, Toronto in June, the Mocha, the Wilco Solid Sound Festival in September. That's going to be an awesome show. Me, John Hodgman, Al Madrigal, Reggie Watts, I think is on the show too. And Wilco is performing the night before. It's a great, big, crazy music and comedy festival in North Adams, Massachusetts. So my website has all that info. And if you want me to talk about anything specific on the podcast, you can always feel free to send me a tweet and just say, hey, I want to hear your thoughts on this or whatever. Also, if you want to give the review 5 stars on iTunes, do it. But I don't like, let's make it like a private joke between us. I like when other podcasts do this. And I think my favorite compliment I've been getting is, hey, I listened to your podcast. I don't know if people are trying to say it's good or bad, but I love those vague compliments that mean nothing and make people paranoid. So if you like it, throw in 5 stars, just put, hey, I listened to your podcast. I'll know what it means. I'll love it. I actually try not to read the reviews, but sometimes I have someone else check for me just to make sure that people are at least downloading. Okay. You guys have been awesome. We'll talk again next week. I'm Jen Kirkman. Until next time, have fun.
I am angry, I am ill, and I'm as ugly as sin. I don't know what keeps me alive and kicking.